Good morning. So a few years ago, Beth and I had the opportunity to go back and have a couple of days at the same location, the same resort that we had our honeymoon at some 15 years previous. And it was really neat to go back, but it was amazing to see how much it had changed. When we went there, it was a small resort, and now they had expanded into the jungle, which is where we had been staying. So it was the Riviera Maya, which is kind of beach meets jungle in Mexico, over near Cancun, but about an hour away. And I was amazed at how much this place developed. They were selling houses there, but it couldn't develop very quickly because this resort actually had to build a water treatment plant, much like we would have here. A place to get clean drinking water, but also a way to filter out the bad water before it went back into the ocean. There was so much infrastructure that it took for them to get from the small resort that we stayed at to this big one. And then we went on a tour of the area a little bit, and we realized that there were so many areas that were just undeveloped. And I started to wonder, I mean, these are million-dollar views. You're looking out at the ocean, and there's all of these open areas where there haven't been resorts or houses or anything built. And I asked one of the gentlemen there that was taking us around about it, and he said, well, the answer is very simple. I was like, why hasn't this been developed? Why haven't people built things here? And he said, well, there's one major reason, and it's called hurricanes. As we've seen in the news here, and you've seen what happened to Fort Myers, the storms come, and it could be a beautiful area and a wonderful sandy beach and a million-dollar view, but the storms come, and it better be built strong. Because if it's not been built strong, if the house is a hut, if it's made with banana leaves or other things, and it's all put together, it could be functional and it could be beautiful, but the storm will come. It'll blow it all away. It's a big difference between seeing what happens in a hurricane that comes through Fort Myers and what happens when those same hurricanes come through Haiti or these other impoverished areas where they can't afford to build strong, where the houses aren't on stilts, where they don't have deep pilings that hold them in place. Truth of the matter is, the storm always comes. It might be a few years, it might be almost a lifetime, but inevitably the storm comes. It's a big part of what Jesus is sharing with us as he closes off the Sermon on the Mount. Sadly, this is our last message on the Sermon on the Mount. It's been very nice for the past months to always know what I was preaching next as we went through the series. But come next week, it'll be something new. I've got a few ideas there, but hopefully the Holy Spirit narrows it down for me. But as Jesus closes the Sermon on the Mount, it's clear that he doesn't promise his followers clear skies. Even so, he does promise that all those who obey him will remain strong even through the fiercest storm. Again, Jesus doesn't promise that there will be no storms, but he promises that through the storm, if we follow him, if we learn to obey him, that we can stand strong, that we can be unaffected, at least unaffected in a bad way, by the storms that come. So as we begin the message this morning, I want to begin by looking at the storm. In Matthew chapter 7, verse 25, we see the rain came down and the streams rose and the winds, they blew and they beat against that house, yet it did not fall. And here he's talking about the house built on the rock because it had its foundation on the rock. There's a part of me that would have preferred that Jesus had a different message here. There's at least a small part of me that wishes that Jesus had said that the rain came only, the storm came only on those who built their house on the sand. And those houses were washed down, but for those who built their house on the rock, it was 365 days of sunshine a year. with the occasional gentle rain that came just as the plants needed it to replenish that picturesque babbling brook, and that I could come in my house built on the foundation, sit in my rocking chair, and I could, in the comfort of no rain and no storm, watch the fierce storm nearby. And I could do it in all safety and all peacefulness, knowing that they deserve the storm that came anyways. Been in churches where they almost preach that gospel, where there was this idea that if I follow Jesus, that I don't have to deal with the storms. And when storms hit other people, I really don't have to care because they probably deserved it anyways. I don't need to help out those who are in need because they made their bed and now they can sleep in it. I have my comfort and I can watch for my comfort. The problem is that works for a while and then a storm comes in their life and there's a crisis of the faith. How could God do this to me? How could God bring the storm to my doorstep? Because I feel like I was promised if I followed Jesus, it would always be clear skies. It's not the message that Jesus gives us. But sometimes it's the message of the church. God promises that the storm will come and He will help us weather the storm, but He promises the storm will come. We can go back just a few verses in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, verse 44. We're in 7, so this has been a long message that Jesus shared. But in verse 44, He says, "I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good, and He sends His rain on the righteous and the unrighteous." Again, the storm is a promise, whether you are righteous or unrighteous. And I could pull a handful of passages from Proverbs and the Psalms that all say the same thing. God hasn't changed throughout the whole scope of Scripture. Good times and hard times fall on believers and unbelievers alike. The storm of life will rage for all of us. Even if we go all the way to the end of our Bible, in the book of Revelation, we hear about this time of great tribulation. And I know some of you might believe that God will take His church out before it all begins. Some of you might think it happens in the middle, and some of you might think it happens at the end. But either way, God shares that there is a day of trouble. If you don't believe that storms come for believers, then you need to have a conversation in heaven with the martyrs that are there. One of my favorite books to read through is Fox's Book of Martyrs. It's a big one, and it goes through history of the saints of old, how many of them laid down their lives for their faith. There was a day of trouble that came, a fierce storm that raged. So we don't get a pass as followers of Jesus from the storm. But God's promise remains for those of us who build upon the rock. And we'll talk more about that in a few minutes. He will help us to withstand it. We get to receive His grace and His mercy, His protection, that we may be bent but not broken, that we may be crushed but not despaired and not destroyed. So you have to be careful because there's a danger in bad metrics. I learned this the hard way when I started my business. We made our own software that helped us keep track of our tickets, of when we had guys go on site and do work. It kept track of everything that we were interested in. And it's a really great system. But on the first days that we created it, especially when you create your own stuff, you find out that you made mistakes, that there were bugs. And Landon and I were so excited. We were doing so well. We felt great. And then we realized that our math was really wrong. And we got our P&L from QuickBooks and realized it looked very different than the expectations we had in our own software. We'd miscounted some things. And while we thought we were doing really, really well, we were doing pretty poorly. And we have to be careful that we have the right metrics, that we understand what Jesus is asking us for, what he's calling us to. Because I've been in churches where the message was, you come to Jesus today, you walk down to this altar, and I promise you it will be smooth sailing, and everything will be great, and your life will be amazing. And I'm not saying that your life won't be deep and fulfilling and wonderful with Jesus, but it won't be easy. And I really believe that what we call people to, when you go out and try and make disciples, what you call people to is what you call people for. And if you call people to a life of ease and luxury, it doesn't look like what we called them for. We bring in passages of Jesus saying that my disciple will pick up my cross and carry it. When Jesus said, make no mistake, that a servant will be treated no better than his master. And we know what the world did to Jesus. They beat him, they cursed him, and they crucified him. So we have to be prepared for the storm. It's going to come. And it doesn't mean that you are a bad Christian. And it doesn't mean that God is mad at you. It's not God's judgment upon you. It's a storm. And if we've built our foundation upon the rock, then we're going to make it through. And if we haven't, it's time to start. The second thing I want to look at this morning is the wise man. So we'll start back in verse 24. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock. Well, our passage begins here with a therefore, and every preacher should tell you that anytime you see a therefore, we have to look at what it's there for. It brings us up to the previous passage, and last week we talked about what it means to be a true disciple. There were these sets of comparisons. We had the wide and the narrow road. We had the true and false prophet, and we had the true and false disciple. And for us, on a practical case, the true disciple is the one who does the will of Jesus' Father. Here, Jesus says, anyone who hears these words and puts them into practice. Jesus is saying that the wise man is the one who does the will of the Father, the true disciple. And this is where I think we have to be careful with what we learned in children's ministry as a kid. And again, I love children's ministry. But sometimes I wonder if we have to kind of unlearn and relearn some of the Bible stories and passages that we were taught. It's funny, if you go into a nursery, I always chuckle when I go into a church nursery and there's this beautiful mural of Noah's Ark painted on the wall. And again, Noah's Ark ends well. But even after, I mean, there were a lot of bodies scattered around the ground when the water receded. It's not this cushy story. It is a story of deliverance, but it's also a story of terror as the majority of the world drowned and died because of their sinfulness. God preserved Noah and his family, but so much other was destroyed. There were so many days of rain. The storm raged. And here, this is often taught. We say, if you come to church on Sunday morning, you're the wise man and you built your house on the rock. But if you don't go to church on Sunday morning, then you're the one who built your house on the sand. Or if you say this prayer as a seven-year-old, then you're there forever. You built your house on the rock. But if you don't do it, then you're the one in the world who built your house on the sand. And that's not what this passage is saying. This passage is a lot more difficult than that. What Jesus is saying is that it doesn't matter if you're here in the crowd today. In fact, we're going to learn that many that are in that crowd today are not the wise man, but the foolish man. But it's not just about attending church or making a commitment to Jesus. It's about obeying Jesus. You become a wise man that builds your house on a foundation of rock if you are the one who does the will of our Father in heaven. It doesn't mean that we earn our salvation, not in the least. But that foundation is not secure if we don't do the things that we have been taught. You can grow up in church all throughout. You can be 85 and have gone to church every Sunday of your life. But if you don't put those things you've learned into practice, if you know what God is asking of you, but yet doesn't do those things, if you say, oh, but God, those are too hard. God, I don't like that. I'd rather do it this way. I'd rather keep my whole paycheck. I'd rather look lustfully at other women. I would rather hold on to my bitterness. I'd rather gossip. I'd rather judge those other people. I mean, we just went through the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount, and Jesus gave us a lot of really hard, practical instruction. And if you say, I'd rather not forgive, I'd rather hold on to hatred, I'd rather actively lust, I'd rather steal, I'd rather lie, I'd rather gossip, I'd rather judge, well, then you are building your house on the least, I can't think of the word, on sand that is shifting out from underneath you. It's not enough to come and be a part of the club. A true disciple is someone who hears the words of Jesus and obeys. Those who hear and obey, those who do the will of the Father, they are like the wise man who builds their house on the rock. And we'll compare that now with the fool. Matthew chapter 7, verses 26 and 27. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. We have to understand that the majority of the crowd, of all those who are there hearing Jesus' words, as he closes this message, this is not how you run for political office. This is not a stump speech. This is not how you make friends. But he's making it very clear that of this group, whether they realize it or not, most of them are the foolish builder. So many of the Pharisees that are judging Jesus, that will be a big part of bringing him before the Sanhedrin, before the courts, before Pontius Pilate and up on that cross. That most of those who are here, and we know it because we see those who stand by Jesus at the crucifixion, they can fit in a room. It's a mountainside, and there are so many people in the crowd, but those who will be true believers, who will be standing next to Jesus and standing up with Jesus, they will fit in a room. And I have a lot of hope that many of those here may have become those believers that were added after the day of Pentecost, when the church grew and it grew and it grew, that Jesus is preaching and his teaching around the Jewish areas, that they were successful in planting seeds and preparing hearts for what was to come. But as they will leave him there that day, they will hear the words of Jesus and they will not put them into practice. They will hear the words of Jesus and they will say things like they did in verse 28. When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers or their normal teachers of the law. So they leave and they say, he was amazing. I felt so good when I heard him speak. That was so great. But yet they didn't remember or put into practice really anything that he taught. See, for those who put into practice the words of Jesus, for those who have learned to forgive those who have hurt them, for those who have learned to make themselves a living sacrifice, as the Apostle Paul talks about in the book of Romans, to take their flesh and their gifts and their skills and their pride and their ego and lay it down before Jesus. For those that have learned to walk in the Spirit of God and live out the fruit of the Spirit, love and joy and peace and patience and gentleness and kindness and self-control, the storm will still come, but God's grace will exceed the storm. And as we've gone through a tough year as a family, there are days that we've done that, and there are days that I wondered if I was more the fool. As the storm raged, God's grace became so rich and so deep that I experienced it in a way that I never had when there were sunny skies. His mercy and His strength, God's provision. We had some $35,000 out of pocket, I believe, in Anna's medical expenses last year. It's not easy to do. And there were days that I was worried about it, but then there was this amazing provision that as bills came in and they had to be paid, as we were denied for that Medicaid waiver over and over and over again, God opened up a door. I would have a good month at work, or I would open up a card that would have a generous gift in it. Sometimes from people I didn't even remember from previous churches or other connections that I'd never even told our story to. God's provision was good. The storm rages and God is there to give us everything we need to hold us up through it. And while it may feel like we are close to destruction, we will never be destroyed. We can learn to walk in a confidence and a peace that those who don't know Jesus will never understand. There were so many. In fact, we've had social workers at the hospital that say, wow, I can't believe you and Beth are still married. Most couples that go through this, it tears them apart. You guys are really rare. Not the way I would have phrased it. I don't know if that's a compliment or what that is, but it's true that these things can be so destructive in God's grace, His peace. There were those who would say, I can't believe through some of these things that you're even able to sleep at night. Exhaustion helps. But God's peace was there. But for the fool, for the one who hears the words, maybe they came to Sunday school as a kid. Maybe they made a commitment to Jesus. But if we don't put the words of Jesus into practice in our life, then we are building a house. We are building a house of faith that one day the storm will come and it'll tear it all down. I have seen people who knew. I have friends that have seminary degrees. They have devoted as many hours, if not more, to understanding the scriptures than a lawyer does to becoming a lawyer. I mean, they have put in so much time and effort, and if you ask them, they know almost anything academically about the Bible. They might even be smarter than me. But if you talk to them today, because they never obeyed Jesus, they never learned to put the teachings of Jesus into practice in their own life. I have friends that have been through seminary and don't even believe in God anymore. It's a big investment to make and to walk away from the faith. For whatever reason, maybe you believe the storm wouldn't come and you held tight to that, like some of my friends have. told you in the past about my friend who has Parkinson's disease, and he was a Pentecostal preacher. And it was all good until he got sick. And everyone in the church is like, well, pastor, I guess you just don't have enough faith. Because remember, if you had enough faith, you'd be well. God doesn't bring the storm to those he loves. It's bad theology. He suffered dearly for it. He had to really reimagine what he believed. Dig back into the scriptures. So maybe it's because they didn't expect the storm. Maybe they just were never really ready to give up control. But for whatever reason, we can know the scriptures. We can know what God asks of us. But if we don't obey, if we don't learn to put those things into practice, and I'm not saying that we lose our salvation if we have a sin sprinkled in here or there. In fact, I'm going to be honest, I mess up a lot more than I probably get it right. But you walk forward and you say, okay, today it's a new day, and Lord, I want to do what you've commanded. I want to be obedient to you. We repent and we move forward. But the fool is the one that hears it, doesn't put it into practice. And again, that was the majority of the crowd. Jesus calls us to him wherever we are. We can come as we are to Jesus. And there's not meant to be a barrier, a hurdle for us to get across. I don't care what kind of clothes you have. I don't care if you haven't showered in 3 days. We like showers for church, but if you haven't, that's okay. You're welcome here. Anyone is welcome here. You can come as you are, but God's expectation is that we don't stay that way. That we don't stay in our sin, that we don't stay in our filth. And obedience isn't what provides our salvation, but it's an outpouring of it. Obedience is what we want to do when God has done a work to change us, when the Holy Spirit has been active. So God says we can come as we are, but I want you to hear this. And this is something that I think for me has been revolutionary. Is that Jesus doesn't give us any room to be casual Christians. He doesn't. You're either all in or you're not in. And I know we like the idea, and I'm not saying that somebody, I'm not the judge. So if somebody says a prayer in 5 minutes and accepts Jesus, it's between them and God where their soul is. But if there is no fruit, the scriptures make it clear. There's not room for us to be casual believers. Jesus is saying that if we want to be the wise person, we have to obey his commands. And as we obey his commands, Jesus changes everything. Everything changes. We become something else, but we become something better. We don't become less of who we are. We become more of who we were created to be. But again, there's no such thing as a casual Christian. So this morning, where are you? Because the storm's going to come. Are you the wise man who has heard the words of Jesus and is trying so hard to put them into practice? Wise woman? Are you like the majority of the crowd? If you heard the words of Jesus, you want to dabble in it a little bit. If you heard the words of Jesus and said, that was nice. Have you heard the words of the preacher and said, I feel great. I'm encouraged. I'm going to go forward for another week. But then as soon as you walk out these doors, do you live your life just like you did before? It's a question I would ask my own children at 11 years old, 12 years old, 16, 17 years old. And it's the same question I would add to some of you who are in your 80s, who have been doing this for so long. when you leave these doors, is tomorrow just another day? Or are you compelled to do the will of your Father, to obey the commands of Jesus? Worship team, let's continue to worship.